Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Danny Wisentowski. St. Louis is home to dozens of historic cemeteries, each with their own stories within their gates. Among the largest and still active today is Bellefontaine Cemetery in Arboretum. More than 87,000 people are buried at the 175-year-old cemetery. That includes St. Louis icons like John and Mary Meacham, Priscilla Mother Baltimore, and William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Bellefontaine offers guided tours year-round, but every fall, they collaborate with a theater company, Hawthorne Players, for Voices at Bellefontaine. The annual show is performed on the cemetery grounds. Guests ride a trolley to three stops throughout the cemetery's 314 acres to hear monologues about the lives of those memorialized there. Producer Darius Varner sat down with Voices of Bellefontaine writer and director Larry Marsh and cemetery chronicler Dan Fuller to discuss the performance, its inception, and having the cemetery as its setting. Here's their conversation.
Let's get this little bit of it out of the way. So, Dan, before we started recording here, I told you that I grew up in Bellefontaine, neighbors.
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about the pronunciation.
But the cemetery is Bellefontaine.
Bellefontaine proper. We will answer to both. And as I always like to point out, all you have to do is check the name tag. Never been a U. And it is one of those issues with the influx of heavy German population in the 1820s, 30s, and 40s, manipulating much of the original French and, more importantly, Spanish pronunciations. Bellefontaine becomes Bellefountain, Gravois becomes Gravois, and so on and so forth.
So. Yeah, so it is true that St. Louis people are just bad at pronouncing French words.
But again, it gives the identity too, so...
On another little personal note, while I was researching for this segment, I discovered that the cemetery has a historical story section, and right now it is historical women. And one of those women is the first Black woman to join the attending staff for St. Louis Children's Hospital, Dr. Helen Nash.
She's a cenotaph.
What does that mean?
Cenotaph, by definition, is empty tomb. So it is memorialization without human remains. She is actually buried in Oakland Cemetery in Atlanta with her family.
Oh.
But she, in the 1970s, had bought two graves, one for her husband, who had just passed, and then one for herself. But later on, she decided, because she has such historic conductivity with the medical profession and through her father and grandfather, that she wanted to be buried with them. And so in 2016, we identified she wasn't going to use that. So we approached her niece, which is still doing the clinic there at basically the Rock Road and King's Highway, if we could go ahead and finish the stone that she started, therefore making it a cenotaph.
Wow. That is amazing. And what I was leading to is that her niece was my pediatrician when I was a kid.
It's been a great honor to do tours and actually have people say that Dr. Helen Elizabeth Nash was their pediatrician. So next generation going down. Great.
And with that in mind, you know, there's 175 years of history. There's 314 acres of this cemetery. Does this happen often where people are like, hey, I have a weird random connection with the person interred here?
It's feast or famine. So it's either from that standpoint or from another, you know, never been here, or the, as you and I were discussing before, the misconceptions about who and what Bellefontaine is. And that's why what Larry and the Hawthorne Players does is so important, because I put it under the guise of educating the public. And, you know, the public sometimes likes people to yak like we're doing right now, but then some people like a performance.
Yes, of course. And just to kind of speak about the performance for just a moment, Voices of Bellefontaine started at a different cemetery, correct?
That's right. It began at Valhalla Cemetery in Normandy. We were approached with the possibility of doing plays or monologues in the cemetery, bringing folks who were there to life briefly. And so I thought, well, will this really work? Astonishingly, we ended up with sold-out performances. People camped out as if we were rock stars. They would get there at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning to be able to get a ticket.
Wow.
So that went on for about 10 years. The next day, I think, or shortly after that, the folks from Bellefontaine gave me a call because they had often, many of the people there had often attended the Voices at Valhalla and said, you know, would you like to do that here? And it's intimidating simply because it's such a magnificent cemetery and it's such an important history. And I felt honored to be asked to do that, and I hope that we have done it well. It's we approach it as theater that happens to be in a cemetery, and a very intimate kind of theater because there are 25 people close. And they're not sitting there in the dark.
Yeah.
They're right there where you see them. And so it takes a special kind of actor to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The monologues are about 12 to 15 minutes long. It's a lot of lines without someone feeding you another line as you do in a regular play.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's an honor to do it. And with the help of an incredible staff at Bellefontaine, who seem to know about all the thousands of people who are there, I don't think I can stump Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
one of the things I cherish is try to find something that Dan doesn't know.
Has that happened at all?
Oh, yeah.
It happens rarely, but it has. This year, there is a connection with one of the characters with another American that I don't think anyone has made that connection before. It's not on Wikipedia. It's not on Ancestry.com. So I'm very proud of that. And Dan didn't know it.
And I want to talk about that in just a brief moment. But I want to circle back really quick to the stories of the cemetery. And I spoke with the president and CEO, Sherry Smith. Unfortunately, she couldn't be with us today. But she said on the phone, every stone has a story, but not every story has a stone. And do you share that sentiment with her, Dan?
Well, yeah, that 87,000 burials and about 15% are unmarked.
Well,
sometimes it is intentional. German freethinkers are notorious for not marking. It could be that there was a marker and it failed because it was limestone or marble. And so through the efforts of a very robust volunteer force, we're able to give voice when there may not be a marker. And again, all of these, like the productions that the Hawthorne Players does, the tours that we do, PowerPoint presentations, the community outreach that we call Beyond the Gates, is all to give voice to those that might be overlooked in a walk through the cemetery.
And on a brief note about, you know, stories that are being uncovered, you told me before we started recording today that there's someone there named Harry Dan.
Harry Dan, D-A-N-N. And this is one that I'll throw out, and maybe Larry will want to chase a little bit. But a surprise to me, as many times this is, he is at the cemetery, unmarked. In fact, everybody in the family lot that he is at is unmarked. Mm. And he was the signature clown for Ringling Brothers for many years. And the interesting thing that I saw in my little cursory review is the fact that he was the image for a decade after his death. They kept using his image.
Wow. I looked him up. I had to go see what he looked like because I was like, all right, I'm a little scared of clowns, but I need to see this guy and see what he looks like. And he is, I mean, when I think of a clown, that's what I think of.
Yep.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So are there any stories that you all have found in your research for Voices that haven't quite made it to the stage for any particular reason?
Well, I would say, particularly at Valhalla, and also at Bellefontaine, but particularly Valhalla, people would come to us and stop by after the performances and say, you ought to do my grandmother, a typical sort of thing. And this is fine if you have an interesting grandmother. So often they weren't so interesting. But I do remember one lady coming up and said, you know, you should do my family. And was just really delighted that we might do it, she thought, which included several of them murdering each other.
Oh.
And they were there, of course, all in the same plot. And she thought, this will be just a grand story. And I thought, I don't think we're going to go there.
That's a little dark. Do you ever get that dark?
No. In fact, one of the things that, and this is also true at Bellefontaine, it's in October, but it's not at all Halloweenish.
Mm-hmm.
It's serious theater. There are laughs occasionally, but there are, and there are, if there are scares, it has to do with the implications for modern history.
Mm-hmm.
I would say those exist, but not the haunted kind.
Yeah. Right, right. As we mentioned in the intro, we're talking about stories here. Mary and John Meacham. I want to confirm, are they actually interred at Bellefontaine?
John Barry Meacham is, but Mary Meacham is a cenotaph.
Ah.
Her final place of rest is unknown to scholars. Even though we know that she died in 1869, mm-hmm. her final place of rest is still undisclosed at this point. And so we do have researchers looking into it. And she is one of those people that I feel that we will figure it out eventually. We actually have another one we're working on right now. We'll throw this at both of you. Benjamin Howard.
Who's that?
Yes.
The third territorial governor of our state.
Whoa.
So he was in the North City Burying Grounds up until 1858, and he was supposed to be moved to Bellefontaine Cemetery, but it didn't happen. And so his final place of rest has been somewhat of a mystery. And we have about 8 or 9 people coming together in what I call a round table to see if we can't kind of piece things together.
Mm-hmm.
We did this once before with the Lemp family, Adam Lemp. 3 Lemp historians came together. And it was very interesting to see how each of the 3 juxtapositions kind of played with one another and helped form. Chris Nafzinger is somebody that you might know, recently wrote a book on Adam Lemp. And I think part of his reason and rationale was that round table mm-hmm. that we had.
And just as a note, Benjamin Howard died in 1814.
Correct. He had given up the governorship to go participate in the War of 1812, and he was on his way back when he passed.
Mm.
And we know where his wife is. His wife is buried in Kentucky, but his final place of rest right now is unknown. And early in St. Louis, if you said you were going to go visit the general, that was the general you were going to go visit.
Wow. Wow, so much knowledge we're getting here on St. Louis on the Air today.
And Larry. Speaking of John and Mary Meacham, we did both of those characters, brought them to life. And John is particularly known because when it was illegal in the 1850s in Missouri to teach black children to read, write, and study just in general,
mm-hmm.
He was able to skirt that law by having his steamboat, anchored in the middle of the Mississippi and ferried kids out in small boats every day for that. Well, one of those children, I made a connection, is one of the characters we're going to do this year.
Oh, exciting.
And he is not at Bellefontaine. He's close,
mm-hmm.
and he's close to another story in his life that was very important. So I'm looking forward for everyone hearing this story.
Yes, yes, of course. And just to keep on the topic of prolific African Americans in history, Priscilla Mother Baltimore is interred.
Mother Baltimore there.
Yes.
And the Roberson family.
The Roberson family?
Roberson family. When Mr. Roberson died in 1878, he was the richest man of color in St. Louis. He owned the most well-appointed barbershop in St. Louis at the Barnum Hotel.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Amazing. I want to hear really quickly a brief bit of Mother Baltimore's monologue from last year's Voices.
I felt called to find a better place, a safe haven for my people. So I purchased land in the wilderness of St. Clair County, gathered up 11 families and led them across the Mississippi River. Our little settlement grew to be known as Brooklyn, Illinois, which is said to be the oldest incorporated town of colored folks in the country.
That was Corinna Redford delivering her monologue as Priscilla Mother Baltimore at last year's Voices of Bellefontaine. So let's dive just a little bit into this year's Voices. So we're going to hear a little bit of the Meacham story. Who else are we going to hear about this year?
Well, we have, again, very often these stories are connected somehow, that there is an arc to the things that are being told. We're going to have 2 characters who are very much important in St. Louis education. One is a first female superintendent of assistant superintendent of the St. Louis Public Schools. Knowing that, by the way, in the 1800s, the St. Louis Public Schools were considered some of the very best in the country.
Wow.
And that character is connected to one. She mentors some students, and they are part of what became a small literary group of just a small number of women who then, a young woman, who produced this literary and artistic journal that then became known and has kind of been rediscovered in some ways. So that's going to be an interesting story to have those two paired. We have a construction engineer who was significant in building railroad bridges, and a mathematician who, a brilliant scholar who entered Yale when he was 14. Mm. Second year there, they told him, don't bother coming to class. And he then graduated as first in the class.
Wow.
So that's an interesting story. And he ends up, by the way, doing pretty well for himself. He ends up being the second chancellor of Washington University.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. What's his name?
William Chauvenet or Chauvenet. It depends upon how people are pronouncing it, how
those
French
they get. Especially here in St. Louis.
Those St. Louisans, they're bad for it.
And then a theater magnate, M-A-G-N-A-T-E, that kind of magnate, who owns in the early 1900s almost all of the theaters in St. Louis. He also has the first movie theater. He introduces sound to movies in 1912. You're saying that's impossible.
Wow.
And it is sort of sound to the movies. But anyway, I think people will find that story interesting. I've mentioned then the character who was on that boat. He ends up becoming the ambassador to Liberia and creates is one of the founders of Lincoln University.
Wow.
So
amazing stories. Amazing stories. How much of... You know, what comes out, the final product, is dramatization.
Well, of course, these are plays, so I have to find the voice of the characters, but I try to be very, very true to historical events. I try to find examples of their writing. Sometimes it's reported. Mm-hmm. The character that I've just mentioned, who becomes the ambassador to Liberia, gave an interview to the Post shortly before his death. I found his voice through that. I can't promise that that is historically accurate. I think he sometimes exaggerated the good things and did not mention some of the things that were less pleasant. Mm-hmm. But it was his voice, and I'm telling his story. And so I think that it's very, very appropriate to have him speak as he would have spoken in those times.
That's actually one of those things I think that Larry does incredibly well when you consider the vernacular of the time and where we are today and how people spoke and what is acceptable and not acceptable today. That can be a real struggle sometimes, because if you're being true to historic aspect, it would not do well with our public today.
True, true. We're talking with Dan Fuller and Larry Marsh about Voices of Bellefontaine, not Bellefountain, Bellefontaine, an annual theatrical experience at Bellefontaine Cemetery where actors portray notable people who are buried or maybe not buried at the cemetery.
Right. And that was one of the little changes that we made when it came from Valhalla, because it was specifically Voices at Valhalla. And
Voices of Valhalla.
And we become Voices at Bellefontaine.
Mm, okay.
So that we can introduce some of these extended stories. And I think this really came about because I had found the Gerhardt sisters and actually had thrown that to some of the folks at Valhalla. And they were kind of hiding at Valhalla because they had married over time. Mm-hmm. And they had come to my attention not because they are with us at Bellefontaine, but Fitzgerald, who was their mentor, was. Mm. And so later when Larry and the team came to Bellefontaine, they were able to give voice to Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
There are many, many connections like that that we've made.
Are you constantly thinking of stories to put into these voices at Bellefontaine?
And see, this is where I'll really get in trouble now with Larry, because I am hot and heavy on baseball.
Yeah.
We have a very rich history of baseball here in St. Louis, of course. And we are now finding a parallel, and this sounds really funny, but some of our first volunteer fire department members were also some of the original club members of baseball in St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
And so I have recently found two of the five men who basically founded the MLB.
Wow. Right here in St. Louis.
Right here in Bellefontaine.
That's amazing. So before we, you know, wrap up for the day, I want to briefly talk about the logistics of putting on a show in a cemetery. It cannot be easy. I am a thespian myself. I've performed in many, many places that are great. The best theaters around the city. But I've also performed in some places that, you know, you'll get your shoes stuck in the mud, or it won't be very good or easy, or you have to project more. So, Dan, from your point of view, how is it planning out this event?
We're not on the graves. That's the most adamant thing. We mm-hmm. do a lot of different things at Bellefontaine, but it comes down to the fact that we are an active cemetery and our families are our most important focus. And so the theatrical presentations aren't done necessarily at gravesite. They're in close proximity. We're usually trying to keep everybody on flat ground in a close area so that we can point out where they are. And then some of this is also done in historic Hotchkiss Chapel, so that it has a 1909 structure about it. But we also, and Larry kind of brought this up before, it's all about the timing. Mm-hmm. So he is very diligent with how many words. Mm-hmm. I have to be very diligent about how far we're spread out. And so we begin at a little talk that Larry will do, 75 people, and then they will board three transports, 25 people each. Mm-hmm. And then they will go to separate places in the cemetery, and then they will rotate.
Gotcha.
So this is a shotgun. And if everything goes well, everything kind of flows together at the end and comes back. Mm-hmm. And everybody has had a similar experience.
But not the same experience.
Not in the same order.
That's awesome.
And that's amazing. That's a challenge that this man has risen to.
And the fact that the order changes for the audience mm-hmm. Does make it a bit more difficult than when it was at Valhalla, where it was sequential. And I could truly build a beginning, a middle, and an end. That is more difficult because each of these three stops mm-hmm. has to, in a way, be complete in itself. And yet they all have to fit together in some way. There are themes, if you pay close attention, and I think most people do, they're going to say, oh, yeah. And very often I will repeat a word, a connection, no matter which order they did it in. Mm-hmm. They will hear about this.
What is the significance of hearing these messages at the cemetery, like within the cemetery, at the gravesites of these people?
It's powerful. It's very powerful. Mm-hmm. Our tours are powerful because we, you know, I kind of consider myself the Cliff Clavin. I have a little bit of tidbit here, a little bit of tidbit there. And then I do have other researchers who can go into greater depth. And now we have another layer of the onion with Hawthorne Players and Larry's skills, crafting this very dynamic, you know, words. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, he counts them out individually. And so each one really counts for something. And it really does have an impact.
Yeah. And you're doing these during the day, Larry. Has that posed any challenges for the actors?
It does. Of course, it's also in the flight path. Mm-hmm. So that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And looking for places that remain in the shade has been a challenge, particularly if we really want to do one by a particular site, mm-hmm. not on the site, but close to it, mm-hmm. Looking around and finding if there are trees and if there's going to be shade. And Dan has promised me there will be shade this year, even if he has to make it.
That's tents. And we're really good at tents at Bellefontaine. So there was one thing I wanted to add before we get away. You brought up Mother Baltimore before, mm-hmm. and you had also brought up Unmarked. Mm-hmm. Mother Baltimore, up until 2008, was Unmarked.
Oh.
So it was the Friends of Freedom Village who actually identified her with us and put the marker in place that we have today. And this is not an unusual or one-off for us. We're constantly identifying people from the past who are not marked in the contemporary so that they can be marked in the future.
That is a beautiful thing to hear, especially from somewhere that's so large and expansive and there's so many people. Before we started recording, you were telling me how everyone is interred there.
Yes.
There's no limit or no restriction. No.
We have had all levels of society, When I first got there was this misconception that we were for the rich and the aloof, that we were the Protestant cemetery. We're a non-sectarian cemetery that have been available to all people since 1849, and there were definitely struggles within that time. But at the end of the day, all are welcome, and that continues to this day.
Beautiful, beautiful. I just have one final question for you all. Have you ever thought, Larry, this is maybe more of a question for you, have you ever thought of making this into a full-length piece, like a full-length for the stage, for the theater play?
We did that. I did that one year for the Voices at Valhalla. And that is, we called it Echoes of Valhalla, did it in the theater, and it was sort of, it was actually very much fun and challenging to bring this out of the cemetery and onto a stage. And I think we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Do something like this with maybe a combination of characters from Bellefontaine and Valhalla.
Well, yeah. I have a thought for you. We'll do it here on the air.
Uh-oh.
I want you to think chorus line. Except this time, it would be those that perished in the Camp Jackson affair in the early days of the Civil War here in St. Louis. That those group of people would come together to tell their story, and a very diverse group of people whose lives would all end that day when they thought they were going to be attending a parade. And it was the beginning of the Civil War for St. Louis.
Whoa.
And a number of our characters in the past, I've actually alluded to Cap Jackson, and they were, in fact, our person that I mentioned, who is the becomes the ambassador to Liberia, was there as a bootblack for one of the leaders, one of the generals of the, one of the colonels, I should say, of the Federal Army.
Whoa.
So there are lots of connections.
That was the writer and director of Voices at Bellefontaine, Larry Marsh, and Bellefontaine Cemetery chronicler, Dan Fuller, speaking with producer Darius Varner. This year's Voices at Bellefontaine show has passed, but as Fuller and his team work to rediscover the stories of those buried at Bellefontaine, Marsh said that Hawthorne players intend to continue the annual October tradition for years to come.
This episode was produced by Darius Varner.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.